Hi, this is Sherelle Dorsey from TED Tech, and this episode is brought to you by Solidigm. The world runs on data, and data relies on storage. But most businesses rarely think about how crucial that storage really is. The truth is, it's no longer just a commodity. With new demands and constraints, especially from AI, the old ways of managing data are holding innovation back. Solid-state storage from Solidigm is changing that. It helps reduce energy use, shrink physical footprints, and accelerate data at the edge, unlocking more from your AI infrastructure. Learn more at whatsthestateofyourstorage.com.
Lock the gates!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck nicks, what's happening? It's Mark Maron here. Host of the WTF podcast. You're listening to it. You're listening to me. I'm a little punchy. I got up very early this morning to fly back from Boise, Idaho at 7 in the morning. Boise, Idaho. That's where I was. Not the easiest place to find a vegan meal. I'm not complaining. I went to a nice Indian place called the Taj Mahal. Had a very, very pleasant, well-prepared chana masala. And I did a show. I flew up there. I don't know who was there. Were you there? I flew up from Atlanta. I did Atlanta on Friday. The Buckhead Theater. Excellent. Full house. Nice crowd. Good vegan restaurants there. A couple. Had pretty good vegan meals. I guess that's what I'm focusing on. I guess that's what this is about. Saw some old friends. My buddy Matt, who you heard on this show, was not in town. So he says. I still don't know where Matt and I are at after our episode, but he said he was out of town, didn't see Matt, saw my old buddy Craig Anton and his wife Leslie, saw my friend Amanda down there, and it's nice. It's nice to go out to cities where you know people. So that all worked out, and the show was good as well. I had a local guy down there named Wellington Ojuku who opened for me, did a fine job. It was pretty interesting. What had happened was it was a 7 o'clock show, and I didn't want to do a 7 o'clock show. I wanted to do an 8 o'clock show. So there was a miscommunication because I had done a 7 o'clock show there the last time I was in Atlanta, and people were scrambling to get there. And this time it was raining, so I literally created a mild party atmosphere. At about 7:10, I got on the God mic. And just told the people what was going on. I said, look around. Clearly not everyone's here. I appreciate y'all making it here on time. But I knew it was a difficult time. And I threw my booking agent under the bus and said, I wanted to do it at 8. So let's just hang out. I made this playlist. We'll just listen to some music. I'll have the sound guy crank it up. And then when most of the people get here, we'll just start the show then. And then I did some jokes from the God mic, got a few laughs, and I think it worked. And I think it's an approach I'll take in the future when things are running late. Just do a little pre-show for my show by me. That's the idea. Tig Notaro was on the show today, and I have not talked to Tig in a while, and I'm a big fan of Tig's. I've known her a long time. She really is. I mean, it's been, geez, how long has it been? 14 years since we talked on a one-to-one basis in the garage. The last time was episode 81 in June 2010. And that's a long time. And she was a different Tig then. I mean, totally, totally a different Tig then. And nothing had happened in her life. No cancer, no stardom. And I met Tig a million years ago. Had to be in like 2007, maybe 2004 or 5. She featured for me in Tampa. And the interesting thing about Tig is she was always Tig. But now there's a lot of depth to it. And it's kind of great. I'm at Largo this Wednesday, March 27th, for a show with comedy and live music with the band, the Song Butchers. I don't think they're going to like that name. Then I'm back on tour in Madison, Wisconsin at the Barrymore Theater on Wednesday, April 3rd. Milwaukee, Wisconsin at the Turner Hall Ballroom on Thursday, April 4th. Chicago at the Vic Theater on Friday, April 5th. Minneapolis at the Pantages Theater on Saturday, April 6th. Austin, Texas at the Paramount Theater on Thursday, April 18th as part of the Moon Tower Comedy Festival. Montclair, New Jersey on Thursday, May 2nd at the Wellmont Center. Glenside, Pennsylvania in the Philly area on Friday, May 3rd at the Keswick Theater. Washington, D.C. on Saturday, May 4th at the Warner Theater. Munhall, Pennsylvania, outside Pittsburgh on May 9th at the Carnegie Library Music Hall. Cleveland, Ohio on May 10th at the Playhouse Square. Detroit, Michigan on May 11th at the Royal Oak Music Theater. And you can go to WTFpod.com/tour for tickets. So I didn't talk about the show in Boise, which was very good. A woman named Brittany Carney opened for me, New York comic. She was great. The audience was great. I did about an hour and a half. And then, not as a cheat, I did do a few Q&As. Don't tell John Oliver, but I did tell some stories that sometimes I put in the set, but I didn't. And it was kind of fun. It was kind of interesting. Boise is one of those places where I feel like, you know, I've provided a safe space for like-minded people, surrounded by definitely not like-minded people. But I did start to explore the phone thing, you know. I mean, I lay in bed sometimes and just, you know, let myself be emotionally jerked around by my phone. And I'm not talking about sexually, though there is that option as well, which makes it even more devious in that I would imagine that there are plenty of people out there whose primary relationship is with that machine, is with the phone. Because I can lay in bed and just scroll through reels and be like, oh, look, they saved that pelican. Ah, oh, look at the duck and a kitten. Oh, my God. What kind of bread are they making? Is that just fried? Where is that taking place? Oh, some rock. There's some Grateful Dead footage. Like, I can sit with my phone for a half an hour and have all the feels, all of them, crying, anger, joy, love, maybe. Like, there's got to be some relationships where people are getting all the feels from the phone in their hand while there's someone sleeping next to them, and then with whatever else they're going to put in their hand. I think it's a problem. Is that what I'm trying to say? I don't know, people. All I know is I was in Boise, and a woman came up to me after the show, my age, and she said, "Do you remember me?" And I didn't really remember her, but her face looked familiar. And she goes, "I knew you in Albuquerque, and we made out." And I'm like, "Did I work with you when I was in high school? What are you talking about?" And then we were able to sort of kind of get the time frame down to right after I got out of Los Angeles the first time, like 1987. So I was probably 24 years old. It was right before I went into rehab the first time. And she said, "Yeah, I was fucked up. You were fucked up. We were hanging out at the El Madrid, watching the Broadway Elks. And we hooked up a couple times." And I'm like, "Well, did we do it? She's like, "I don't remember." And I'm like, "I don't remember either." But I did remember her, kind of. That's wild. To live that long, where you have several different lives. I mean, in talking to Tig, yeah, I found some old memories that are a bit jarring, but I think I can have them and own them. But yeah, as I said before, talking to Tig now and Tig, you know, 20 years ago, is that what? Yeah, almost 20 years ago, where a lot of people thought we dressed the same and it was sort of a joke we had with each other. It's like a different person. The stuff that's happened in her life and, you know, the sort of way she's a lot more open person and a lot more full person. And, you know, just a great talk, really. Her new comedy special, Tig Notaro, Hello Again, premieres tomorrow, March 26th. On Prime Video, it was a great special. There's a great middle bit in there. There's a couple of great stories. And it's always a pleasure. I've done her podcast before, but always kind of a raw. It's like a couple of, you know, previously very defensive people kind of acclimating to their new, more open, grown-up dispositions. And just a nice talk. This is me talking to Tig.
Hi, this is Sherelle Dorsey from TED Tech, and this episode is brought to you by Solidigm. The world runs on data, and data relies on storage. But most businesses rarely think about how crucial that storage really is. The truth is, it's no longer just a commodity. With new demands and constraints, especially from AI, the old ways of managing data are holding innovation back. Solid-state storage from Solidigm is changing that. It helps reduce energy use, shrink physical footprints, and accelerate data at the edge, unlocking more from your AI infrastructure. Learn more at whatsthestateofyourstorage.com.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
I can't, like, I was looking at the records and the booking records, and it was 14 years ago that we did our one long interview. I mean, we've done a couple live ones, but it was 14 years ago.
Wow.
It's fucking crazy.
That's really crazy.
Pre-cancer, pre-everything, pre the whole life of you. I don't even know why you were on.
I don't know what I was doing on this planet.
14 years ago.
During that time period, I'm like... I don't understand who I was. Do you understand who you were 14 years ago?
Well, I think I was more freaked out, and I think I was more panicky about things. And I don't know that I've changed tremendously, but I do feel a little more comfortable in my skin most of the time.
Yeah,
so much has happened for you in 14 years.
So much has happened for you in 14 years.
Yeah, I know, but you have a kid, you have a wife, you have done a million shows. Mine hasn't shifted that much.
Probably part of it, and, you were on my old podcast. And
which one? You do like 9, right?
No. Well, I put everything to bed, and I'm just pushing the handsome podcast now.
And that's you and...
Fortune Femester and Mae Martin.
And Mae, I had her on a couple weeks ago. That was kind of wild.
They, them.
Yeah, sorry. I had they on, them. I had them on. I was real good with the episode. I just slipped.
Yeah, people slip.
Yeah, I know.
It's all about intention, Mark.
It's about intention and training.
Yes.
We have to be trained.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a generation of us that, it's easy to correct.
Yeah. One of my I'll go back to that, but I have to say one of my favorite things, my stepfather, he was in his 70s living in like a small town in Texas, and he had come out to visit in Los Angeles, and my wife Stephanie's mother was dating a man who had a kid that was transitioning, and I told my stepfather, I said, this is before Transparent, TV show, like before things really started to get...
Yeah, change the culture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I said, Rick, I just want to let you know, Carol is dating, her boyfriend has a kid that is transitioning female to male and goes by he, and he is not going to necessarily look like a he, but I just want to let you know that's what's going on. And this is a world, obviously, not in his world.
How did he respond to you just saying that? Did he look confused? Or
no. You know what he said?
What?
Well, I'll call anyone whatever they want me to call them. And that was the end of the story. And I was like, I was so impressed by that. And it's such you slip up and you have to learn new things. But if a 75-year-old man from small town, he was probably 72 or something at the time, whatever, you get it.
Yeah.
From small town Texas can grasp it and have no follow-up questions.
Well, that's the whole thing. I was thinking about it the other day. I mean, how small is your life and how angry are you that becomes some sort of cause?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not doing that.
Right.
I mean, what is that? I don't even understand it.
Nor do I.
I don't understand where that comes from, even.
I don't either. It's baffling. And I try to share that story about my stepfather.
It's beautiful.
Because people are always like, yeah, well, this and that. But, and I'm like, this guy has, this is so far from his world and reality.
And it's not like we haven't shifted language before.
Right.
It's not that big a deal.
We're constantly shifting language, thoughts. Everything's constantly shifting.
Not with those people.
Not with that.
They're holding on.
No. And that ties into what we were talking about before.
Yeah.
When you were on my podcast.
Right.
And now that I've gotten back to that, I'm forgetting what we were talking about.
Oh, I remember. We were talking about things changing for me.
Yeah.
And that, I'd been on your podcast and you had something maybe that you were going to go into and I fucked it up.
Yeah.
Because I started talking about May.
I thought for sure I was going to seamlessly go
back around.
Well, just how people change.
Yes.
And I was going to say, I talked about this with you when you came on my other old podcast that is now... has gone night.
What was that called?
Don't Ask Tig.
Oh, yeah. It's an advice show.
An advice show. And, but we talked about this on that episode, how we've known each other for years.
It's crazy.
It is crazy.
Tampa.
It all started in Tampa. And I always liked you and enjoyed your comedy. Yeah. And then I just have felt like you were one of the people that, I don't know. You've been a real curveball for me, and I as I said on my podcast, you're somebody that I've really gotten to know through your show more.
Yeah,
and I guess that's what happens when people are like, "Oh, I'm a fan of yours," or "I know everything about you."
Yeah,
and it's like, you know, from a distance, I could be like, yeah, I like Mark, and yeah, Mark, yeah, he's funny, and he can be kind of difficult or curmudgeon-y or whatever. But getting to know you and understanding you more through listening to this, it just, and that's again, listening to people and then going, oh, I get him more. And also, for my taste, you've gone in a direction that where I'm like, oh, that's amazing. Look at Mark.
Well, thank you. Well, I feel like, you know, over the years, we've had conversations and we've had interactions and we've had not tensions, but there was, you know, there was some drama.
Sure.
Not with you and I, but, you know, with people we know. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it has to do with how people handle things and whether they're willing to change or sort of own up to things. And I think we've, even though we don't see each other, but I remember the times that we've talked, it's always pretty real.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's off the air, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the last time I talked to you, you made me terrified of oils, of cooking oils. I never forget it. Every time I pour olive oil in a pan.
So you think about me every day, essentially.
Almost. Yeah. Anytime I cook with oil, I'm like, oh, fuck.
I think oil is better for you when it's not heated, essentially.
Yes, essentially. But because of where you were at in your journey with oil, it was pretty like, you know, you're going to get cancer. If you heat up that oil, it's fucking over. And I'm like, oh, my God.
And it might be.
Sure.
It might be for you. It might not be for another person.
That's right. We can't judge.
No.
All you can do is remove things.
All you can do is run around and be terrified. That's all you can do. And that's all I've been doing. And I'm trying to come out of that. I'm trying to find that happy medium. And that even ties back to having differences with people. I'm really trying to find happy mediums with people I disagree with. Is this oil going to kill me if I heat it, or is it better unheated, or, you know?
But also, don't you find, like, it's a stretch of a comparison, but, you know, when you lock into something that makes you feel like you have some control over something.
Yes.
You know, you can get fairly fanatic about it.
Absolutely.
I mean, and that's why, you know, those horrible people that are making a stand over they, them, you know, that's why they do it.
Yeah.
Because this angry need to have control. I'm not suggesting we be empathetic and I'm not apologizing for them. But I find in my life, because things and certainly stuff you've dealt with become so overwhelming and terrifying, you know, oil's going to get you through. Your stance on oil could be what makes your day better, even your week.
And just to be clear, we're talking about cooking oil.
Yes.
We're not talking about
motor oil.
Motor oil.
I don't know where you
stand
on motor oil.
That's for sure. If you heat that up or
could be bad for you.
Yeah, it's definitely it's gonna get you. That motor oil is gonna take you down.
So if you're stop cooking in motor oil. It's not for frying.
That's what I was trying to tell you. Is don't cook the motor oil, Mark.
But I can't remember why, because I've been a vegan now.
Yeah, and I love it.
For
over
a year. But like you were, when I talked to you about oil, you were already veganing.
Yeah, I've been veganing for years.
Since the cancer?
After that, yeah. I've had some, it was kind of crazy to be known for being sick.
Yeah.
Coming through it, and I did it. But
then you got sick again.
Well, the reality is that, you know, there's complications,
sure.
there's medications, there's surgeries, all that kind of stuff that continued with me. And so I got to a point where I was tired of being in pain. I was tired of being fearful.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, what I do have control over is what I put in my body.
Yep.
And so, and I'm not perfect. I do love donuts. I do love
they have vegan donuts.
I know it, sir. And I have kids, and we are full of vegan donuts. And
do you go to Donut Friend? I think you were far away. Donut Friend's in Highland Park, and I go there. I try not to go too often.
Yeah. I mean, I'll have a donut if it's around.
Non-vegan donut?
No.
Oh, yeah.
No. I'm. I don't mess around.
Yeah,
like,
me neither.
Yeah.
And it's like, I shouldn't even give a shit.
Yeah.
But there's something about, and I don't know that, I don't really consider myself a control freak.
Uh-huh.
But I know from being a sober person, and there's a mindset to it. It's like, you know, if I just put a little milk in, it's over.
Yeah. You know? I know. That's how I am, too. I'm like, I can't, my brain go, like, what will happen to my body if, well, and also, you know, when I've ordered a coffee or something and I'm out somewhere and I'm, have you ever done that? And then you're drinking it and you're like, God, this tastes a little weird. I don't know if you have a latte or something.
Yeah. I don't usually. I'm pretty on top of the milk situation.
I am too. Yeah. And I've still, this is over. I've been vegan many more years than you have. And where I'm walking down the sidewalk, I'm like, this tastes so weird. Yeah. And then I'm like, oh, God. Oh, God. Is this cow milk? Oh, God. My wife will full on throw up, spit projectile on the sidewalk if there is any sort of cow involved.
She's totally vegan, too?
Oh, and so are our kids.
Yeah.
Well, and when I say so are our kids, they are, but we tell them.
They can eat meat?
Well,
if you want to.
We do tell them if they want to eat something or try something,
right,
that they can do it because, you know.
Don't want to deny them that.
We want them to think for themselves.
Sure.
We want to lead them in the direction that we think is best, but we also don't want to fully make them, you know.
Right. Resent.
Yeah. So when they go to birthday parties or they're at school or they want to try
they don't
something.
Come home ashamed.
Yeah, yeah. But it's so nice because all their friends always, you know, provide.
Accommodated.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Well,
and then our kids are like, hey, our friends always have vegan food for us. Can we have regular food for them? And Stephanie and I are like, okay. Oh, God.
But the thing about putting, like, where do you stand? Because this is a new thing I've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know if it's correct or right. I think when you do the vegan thing, you got to make sure you get everything you need. Like, you got to take a B12 supplement of some kind.
Yeah,
I use a spray. Do you just spray?
No, I have a little.
You just take a pill?
Yeah. I take a little edible. It's like a little candy.
A gummy? Or
nah,
it's candy?
A crunchy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, another one. But like I've decided that that walnut oil is where it's at. Not cooking with it.
Okay.
Raw nut oil.
Putting it in your car.
But yeah, and it runs amazing. And I don't think anyone knows
it.
No, just put it in a smoothie or something, like a tablespoon for the omegas.
Okay.
What are you doing for your omegas? Seriously.
I mean, I'm eating all sorts of walnuts.
You're eating the walnuts. Mm-hmm. Doesn't it seem like walnut oil, high grade walnut oil, would be a solution to that?
Possibly.
I don't know. I'm just putting it out there.
You know
there.
What I almost brought you?
You seem hesitant and judgmental about the walnut oil choice. Is that because you know something?
No.
Or you never
know
thought
anything.
Of it?
I don't know. Yeah. I have no judgment whatsoever. Mm. I was just more so trying to, I don't know if I'm just being selfish. I was trying to get at what I was wanting to tell you.
Oh, you go ahead.
I forgot to bring you a present.
Oh.
I was going to bring you this thing I created called Dyke Dust.
Yeah.
And it's nutrient dense. And I came up with it when we became vegan. Because, you know, when you become vegan, you're scared that you're not going to get nutrients because people have that drilled in your head.
Yeah.
Which, of course, you won't get the nutrients if you're not, if you're just eating bread and.
No, you can't just do, you know, peanut butter and French fries.
Right.
And wonder why you gained weight.
That is. Have you eaten peanut butter and French fries?
Together?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
I will nut butter, though. Mm-hmm. I will. Yeah, if I'm in a pinch, I'll almond butter, peanut butter, yeah.
Yeah, what about sunflower seed butter?
That's too rich.
Oh, okay.
It's too much.
I like
it. It's good, but it's like 9,000 calories in a tablespoon.
I have a
regular eating disorder, not just an ideological one.
What is your eating disorder?
I'm terrified of fat.
Okay, yeah, I've heard you talk about that. But anyway, I was going to bring you Dyke Dust, and I typically—
What is Dyke Dust? What's in it?
Well, I can't tell you. It's a special
recipe.
Concoction.
Yeast? Is there yeast in it?
There's nutritional yeast.
Yeah.
Can you have some of that?
Sure.
Okay.
I'm just wondering.
There's a lot of stuff. A lot of
and
stuff.
And you designed this?
I designed this because I was so concerned that our kids wouldn't get enough nutrients.
With the vegan thing. Yeah.
So I came up with this, and then I started to realize, like, oh, right, if you eat a balanced diet, it's fine. But this is just extra.
It goes
into, like, savory things.
You just sprinkle it on?
Pizza, pasta, salad, soups.
Yeah.
But I'll get it to you.
Is it like Spike?
I don't know Spike.
I think that's what it's called. There's a couple of, I don't know. It sounds good. Mm. How's it selling?
I don't sell it.
Oh, you just
I just bring it home. Yeah, I just make it and bring it to friends' houses. Yeah, when I go over to somebody's house or go to dinner at their house or it's their birthday, I bring them Dyke Dust.
So are there people that have several containers of going, like, she brought some more. I don't even know what to do with it.
I mean, if I can name drop, Jennifer Aniston is chock full of Dyke Dust. And she was telling me, she said, if you ever sell this, you have to change the name because people like myself are going to get in trouble or not feel comfortable ordering Dyke Dust, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like she has a point. But
but again, just, you know, just adapt. You know, you've signed off on it.
Absolutely. I don't have a problem with somebody. To me, it sounds so normal and sweet. I brought some to my therapist, and she was like, what is this? And I said, it's Dyke Dust. I don't know. And I only came up with that name because it had no name, and I'd take it to somebody's house, and they'd be like, what is this? And I was like, I don't know. It's Dyke Dust. It's is that going to make me gay? I don't know.
That's exactly the intention.
A nutrient-dense lesbian is what you'll be when I leave town.
Well, I thought that was funny in the new special where you just, you know, call yourself an old-school lesbian?
Yeah, like run-of-the-mill, run-of-the-mill old-fashioned lesbian. Well, because with non-binary people and trans, you know, I walk into a public bathroom and I get looks and like intense vibe sometimes of
from
like
who?
People in the public
from
bathroom.
From the dudes at the urinal?
Yeah. Oops. But no, I'll get some sideways looks of like, what are you? Is this the right bathroom?
Yeah.
And I get called sir near daily. Huh. It's not an exaggeration.
Yeah. But you just didn't want to bother with, you know, identifying in a particular, like, modern way?
I mean, that's what it, isn't that still modern, a run-of-the-mill lesbian?
No, I think that's old school.
To be lesbian?
No, to be a run-of-the-mill lesbian.
Yeah, I guess that's
because,
true.
Because it takes me to another time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, college.
Yeah.
You know, like there was a time when, you know, there were lesbians.
And you were experimenting in college. You experimented
with lesbians.
Yeah. You did?
I was the last stop for
everyone got off the train.
Yeah. No, my first girlfriend had just come out of a relationship with a woman, and this was like 1985. Uh-huh. So, but there was a world where there was definitely like a lesbian world and a gay world, mm-hmm. and then you know whatever we were,
yeah.
you know, wandering around. But now that's there's a full.
What do you
spectrum.
Mean? Whatever you were, you and your girlfriend.
No. I mean, just that, you know, there's straight guys, and then there were, you know, guys who were confused and figuring it out.
Mm-hmm. Were you ever confused?
I think when I was in college, yeah, there was a period there where, because I was in, the theater company where I'm like, yeah, I might, maybe I'll kiss a dude.
Did you kiss a dude?
I kissed a dude.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And how did it send you to the moon?
No. No, it felt familiar and peculiar, and the whiskers kind of threw me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My God. Me too. Anytime I've kissed a guy, I'm like, whoa, you got to do something about that. And also, my face would get
red.
Red.
And no, you get the,
like,
red face.
I'm allergic to.
Yeah, I think there was a different kind of thing back then where, you know, if you were like of a certain artistic in, you know, bent, you just wanted to try. But like, not unlike heroin, it didn't stick.
Now, but so you did heroin.
Yeah.
And did you?
Didn't shoot it, snorted it, and not for me.
Okay.
Kissed and so a dude you only once,
kissed
not for me.
One. Okay. Yeah. And what did, was he calling and being like,
no,
hey.
No, it was like one of those weird kind of theater parties, and you kind of just do it.
How, walk me through this. How did, tell me, were you like in the back corner of the room? Were you guys like, we don't care who knows it? I can't. Try and pry me off of this.
No, it was just like, you know, one of those things where I think that, he was, I don't even remember really how it went. Then there was a period there where there was this professor who was obsessed with me. And I think that I was really kind of.
A male professor.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was really kind of lost. And it was more, but I was still dating women. But I think I was just awkward and uncomfortable, and I just liked when people liked me.
Yeah.
So there was not, it was not a big ordeal, but, it just felt like something I had to check off the list.
I see.
It didn't go, like,
yeah.
I didn't, I would, because, like, if you really, like if you want that, if you want to pursue sex with somebody, you feel it.
Yeah.
But if you're just sort of like, well, that was weird. That's different. It's a different feeling.
Yeah, it's a very different feeling. I'm like, wow, okay, I did that.
Yeah. But I think, like, what happened, like, because I feel like in terms of changing that you, like, when I met you, like, was it the cancer or the marriage or the combination of things? Because I think you lightened up and you opened up and you became more sort of, vulnerable and compassionate in a way that, because like when back in the old days, you were a little tough.
Yeah.
And were you aware of that?
I was, for sure.
Yeah.
I was aware of it. I mean, it was, you know, I was tough. I was, I kind of identified with I'm cool.
Right.
You know, that's the thing that's going to get me through this
ride
of life.
I'm
cool.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And cancer and love blew my cool.
Really?
Big time, yeah. And there's, you can't really hold on to it too tightly when you're, you know, when you're deathly ill. Not just cancer, but I had also an intestinal disease and pneumonia, all these things.
What was that MRSA or something?
It's called C. diff.
Oh.
I was unable to eat food for a very long time. And, but it's, you know, when you're, clothes are falling off and you have diarrhea and you're like projectile vomiting.
There's a vulnerability to that.
Yeah. It's like you can't your cool is blown and you're being rolled around hospitals and you're in wheelchairs and you're on medication and I lost over 20 pounds and it's like, I can't be like, hey, hey,
like, what do you think of these boots?
Yeah. Who smells diarrhea? It's mine. Yeah, baby doll.
Yeah. Was Stephanie with you during the cancer?
No, we were, well, she was, but not romantically.
Yeah.
We were working on a independent film called In a World.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We played love interest.
Right.
And I was deathly ill. I had these three deadly illnesses simultaneously and didn't know it. And
you didn't know about any of them?
No.
So you had the cancer and the intestinal thing?
And pneumonia. And
what, do you think you had a cold?
I did. I thought I had a cold, and I wasn't typically very sickly and at all. And so I just told them I wasn't feeling well. And they made this little pallet on the floor, and I would go lie down between takes. And then I had a girlfriend at the time, and
I knew her, I think.
I don't know. No, I don't think you did. One. We were only together for like 6 months. And there was a load that she had to take on. You know, we started dating, and then I was like, oh my gosh, I was so sick. And then it's like, then in the middle of being so sick, my mother trips, hits her head and dies. And then my girlfriend and I split up.
Was she like, I don't want to be selfish, but I can't.
I gotta get the hell out of here.
Too much for me.
But meanwhile, I was all, no, she wasn't. Yeah. You know, I think we were not a match, I know for sure.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy to say she is a very close friend now, and I love her so deeply.
Well, that's nice.
Oh, my God. She's married with kids. I'm married with kids. We all hang out.
Yeah.
And she's just one of my favorite people.
That's
and
great.
She and my wife love each other. But anyway, while I was sick, I was telling her, I was like, I was wanting her to leave me because I really thought I was dying. And I also, when you're that sick and, you know, she and everybody meant well, but when people are asking, hey, how are you feeling today?
Yeah.
It sounds like a nice thing to say,
right.
But it's so hard to get that question when things are so terrible.
Yeah.
And I was so, so sick and I was so deeply sad. And so anytime somebody was like, and how are you doing?
Yeah.
It enraged me.
Oh.
Because it's like, how does it look like I'm doing?
I am
4 pounds.
Yeah.
My mother's dead.
Yeah.
I can't eat food. can you just not? And I said, please stop asking me. I'll tell you if something changes.
Make a little sign. Not good.
Yeah, truly. Truly.
Well, because they're not willing to shoulder what you really have to offer.
Yeah.
So let's just move on.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean.
It's like, you know, I noticed that, but it's different with grief because a lot of times people just, they don't know what to say, but the fact that they're there is nice.
Yeah.
But I mean, but like when you are visibly and clearly ill, I mean, there's a way to ask, how are you doing? I guess there's a way sort of like you ask it acknowledging full well that it's not great. Like, how are you doing? You know,
Right?
If it came at you with the correct amount of concern, would you take it?
No, I think I just need it. Like, if one person, the first time they saw me, said, how are you doing? And I was like, clearly not well. I'm not exaggerating when I say my underwear was falling off.
Yeah.
Like, I was so, I was a bag of bones.
So these people would ask you while you were in your underwear how you were doing?
I mean, if only I could be in my underwear. It was falling off. And I kept thinking I was going to get better, so I didn't buy new clothes.
Yeah.
And then I just kept not getting better.
Ugh.
And so, I think after somebody would see me, ask me how I was doing, I needed the, how are you doing, to stop.
Right.
And then I'll tell you if I'm starting to get better, but I'm not.
But you didn't isolate, right? You still let people hang out.
I did isolate. I got to a point where I just wanted it to be my immediate friends and family.
Yeah.
I was very, to go back to my cool.
Yeah.
I was very protective of myself and the condition I was in.
Because you didn't want to be, like we said at the beginning, like there is a vulnerability to it that's out of your control.
Yeah.
So you don't want everyone to, you know, come by.
No. I remember I went to do Pete Holmes's podcast.
Yeah.
When I was kind of back out.
How was that?
Well, It was good, but when I saw him, he goes, oh my God, Sarah Silverman told me how sick you've been. She'd show me pictures, and I was like,
furious.
I was so upset, and I called Sarah, and I was like, you cannot show people pictures of me. You can. I was so upset.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. She's like, I was thinking, I didn't consider how you would feel. I wouldn't care. And so I am so sorry. Yeah. And I was like, finally, okay. But I was so upset.
Yeah.
And I would never have normally even gone on stage and done a show because I was so private.
Yeah.
I was so cool and shut off and right. Nothing gets to me. And man, when your underwear is falling off.
Changes you.
It really changed me. And so I met Stephanie on that movie. And then when I collapsed one day and went to the hospital and never came back to normal life for a good 6 months.
Yeah.
But when I did resurface, I went to do a show at UCB.
Yeah.
And I ran into Stephanie there. And we had done the movie, you know, 6 months before. And when I ran into her, the movie was going to Sundance, and we exchanged numbers.
Yeah.
We were like, oh, my gosh, how crazy.
Yeah,
I'm going, too. I'll see you at Sundance. We exchanged numbers. And when I gave her my number, I said, and I didn't think, there was no, like, romantic interest between us. But I was single, and she was single, and I gave her my number and I said, and just a heads up, I'm not a big texter.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, me neither. And I said, yeah, I just went out with this girl for a coffee and she texted me right after and said that was so fun. And she knew I had a show that night.
Yeah.
And then she texted me around showtime and said, have a great show.
Yeah.
And then that night she wrote Sweet Dreams.
Yeah.
And I was like, Jesus Christ, like, that was some coffee, huh? And then, so Stephanie's like, yeah, I'm not into texting either. Yeah. And that night I went home and I got a text from Stephanie that said Sweet Dreams. And I was like, oh my God, this girl's hilarious. That made me laugh. It was like silence.
Yeah.
And then 11 o'clock, Sweet Dreams. And then neither of us could stop texting each other.
So now you're a texter.
Yeah. Well, with her, I was taking my phone to the bathtub. I didn't want to miss a single thing she said.
Isn't that great to be locked in and that excited?
Oh, my God.
And it's so important.
Oh, it's so...
You have to pull over your car.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh, my God, Stephanie. I told her later, I was like, when you would text me, it felt like the name Jesus Christ popped up on my phone every time.
It's a good jolt.
I mean, such a good jolt.
And it worked out.
It is still working.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, though, to me, like, because sometimes, like, I hold things pretty close and I don't necessarily trust people emotionally. And I know I'm guarded and I know I'm self-centered and stuff, but I can feel the other side. I just don't always know how to get there most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what the risk of being more open-hearted and trusting really is, but it seems like, you know, you kind of got like a big, you know, cathartic revelation from being forced into this situation where you had, you know, no control and you were able to stay in it. You didn't close back up.
No. I mean, I know it's kind of cliche to say it, but I feel like I was pushed to the very edge and dangled over that edge.
Yeah.
And something yanked me back, and I feel very thankful, and I don't want to be on that edge again.
Are you spiritual?
I wouldn't say that I am.
Yeah.
Stephanie is, and I love that she is. I'm not a religious or... I don't know what I am.
Yeah, I don't. I never locked in with it.
Yeah.
Like, there's never a day where I'm like, is there a God?
Yeah.
It doesn't even cross my mind.
Yeah, yeah.
And some people, that's like their primary turmoil.
Yeah.
And I'm like, nah, probably not.
Yeah, same. But also, if people get something from it and it's a positive experience and they're doing good, I'm all for it.
Yeah,
and
the last part's the important part, the doing good part to that experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really the the determiner of whether or not you you can tolerate it.
I did feel cursed, though. Even though I'm not, like, spiritual, I don't know what that is about my head. But also, I did pray when I was very sick.
I prayed.
And I couldn't believe I was so down and out. And I also, it's so fascinating. I also apologized to God for praying. And
without never checking in.
And never checking in and just swinging by and being like, can you help me out? I know I don't even believe that I'm talking to you. All of this is.
How is this not in the show?
Yeah. But and I did. I prayed pretty regularly, and you know, obviously there is a God because I did make it out alive.
Sure, of course, obviously He heard your prayers, and you're all set.
Thank you.
There is something funny about the awkwardness of prayer when you're not a religious person, because you know, in recovery, that you know, it's sort of part of it at the beginning, and they're pretty clear, like it's of your understanding. You don't have to have one, and you know, so there is that moment. It's a very funny scene if you think about, like, hey, I don't know.
Trying to get it. How do I start? Where to begin?
My name's Mark.
But you know that. It's awkward and it's embarrassing because even being alone.
Yeah.
Praying.
On your knees. To get on your knees alone.
Oh, I didn't get on my knees.
Oh, I did. It's heavy.
You got on your knees.
I got on my knees.
When did you pray on your knees?
Like early sobriety. You know, because like I had a sponsor that was like, just do it. You know, what do you got to lose? And I'm like, all right, you know, I'll try things.
That's really awkward.
Well, yeah, because
getting on your knee that
by yourself.
And that seems like you've taken it a step further.
Well, that's the deal. But I think that's really the power of it. Mm-hmm. However you get there, it's the humbling. Mm-hmm. It's the humbling of realizing that, you know, you have control of very little. Mm-hmm. Right. And to humble yourself before whatever the universe is a real kind of heart opener. And it's a very weird, vulnerable place to get on your knees. Yeah. Or even to pray in general for someone who doesn't pray.
Laugh a little bit when you got on your knees?
Yeah, I think so. My sponsor at the time said it doesn't matter if you believe to pray, because there's something almost ancient about the groove, the universal groove of prayer. Mm-hmm. You know, even if you don't believe, the amount of praying that happens in the world throughout the history of human beings is some sort of frequency that you can tap into non-denominationally. Mm-hmm. And that's some mystical shit, but I like that framing of it.
Yeah.
That's why it's effective.
Yeah. And do you still get on your knees?
Not really.
Pray?
I haven't got on my knees and prayed in a while.
How long?
Maybe after Lynn died, I did, probably. You know, just to feel that. I think the humbling thing releases you of something.
Now, here's what's really interesting. I honestly can't wait to go home and get on my knees and pray tonight.
Oh, good.
I'm serious. Like, I want to see what that feels like.
It's you know, you can handle it.
What if that's the thing that broke me? That was the end of Tignot.
She started eating meat right after she prayed. Now she's with a dude.
Classic Tig. You're always taking a risk there.
I think the last time I talked to you was interesting because, well, maybe a couple times ago, where, you know, I was like, you know, what are you doing? You know, and you're just like, I'm just, like, I don't want any more bullshit. I just want to just raise my family, and I don't want anything. You know, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And that's what you did, kind of, right?
I mean, that's what I am doing. I mean, I'm obviously still working. I just finished a big tour, but
Before the special? Leading up to the special?
Leading up to the special.
To build it out?
Yeah.
Figure it out?
That's correct.
You got to explain a thing to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was one of those people you were talking about. I watched the Shaleen.
Yeah.
I watched the joke two or three times, and I couldn't quite figure out, you know, what the hook was, what the thing was.
You still don't get it?
I get that you made this assumption about, based on this name that wasn't real, and you brought up something from your life, and it was just awkwardness, right?
Well, yeah, she was talking about
Nicole.
Reese Witherspoon was talking about Nicole Kidman.
Right, and you thought she was talking about another woman.
No. I thought, because Reese Witherspoon was talking about the different heights of the different actresses on Big Little Lies.
Yeah.
And Reese said, I'm 5'2", Laura Dern's 5'10", Nicole Kidman 6 feet, and Shailene is 5'7" or 5'8".
Yeah.
I thought Reese said that Nicole Kidman is 6 feet and she leans.
Oh, so there is a Shailene.
Shailene Woodley.
Yeah, right. She's her, the actress, yeah, right? The other actress.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I get it. Okay. I didn't know Shailene.
I had never heard of her when I when that happened, and so I just knew.
It's very funny now.
Yeah, and so. Oh no, maybe it doesn't translate.
No, it does. It does.
But what I said to Reese when she said, and Nicole Kidman's 6 feet, and I thought she said, and she leans 5'8". Yeah. And I said, oh, well, I used to date a woman that was 6 feet, and I think she hunched.
She was insecure about her height, so
and
she hunched.
So she hunched. And Reese
just sat there.
And her producing partner, Lauren, and my wife, Stephanie, were all blank face staring at me like, what are you talking about?
Okay, I see if I know, because I like that actress, Shailene Woodley. Is that her name?
Yeah, you seem like a huge fan.
No, I do, but I didn't know her name right off.
Yeah,
so that fucked the joke up for me. But everyone seemed to get it.
Yeah.
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 It's not a problem with the bit.
And I would have probably gotten... I probably wouldn't have said what I said if I knew the name Shailene Woodley.
Right, exactly. Right, it's very funny.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, do you, because you remember you had that, years ago you had that story about meeting Taylor Swift.
No, Taylor Dane.
Oh, it was Taylor Dane?
Yeah.
God damn it.
Yeah.
Do you know Taylor Swift?
I don't, but I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just needed to.
What?
I got it. Like, I'm doing my closing bit. Involves a Taylor Swift song, and I need her to sign off on it.
Oh, okay.
At some point, if I want to put it on a special. And I kind of know Jack Antonoff. I don't know how it's going to happen. It doesn't make fun of her. It's kind of a great joke. Like, in your closing, you didn't have to ask Adele for...
No, I didn't. No, nothing that I did was recognizable. I don't know if Adele will... even know that that has anything to do with her.
Do you know her?
Adele?
Yeah.
No.
You just met her?
No, I didn't even meet her. Oh. She was just at the party.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, to be honest, I don't know where she was at the party when I did that thing.
I think it's a very funny special.
Well, thank you.
You're very funny. And it's so odd, though, too, because, you see it, even in the arc of your specials, you're sort of... open-heartedness have shifted, right? You know, the difference between this special and one from your first special. Mm-hmm. Can you see it?
Oh, again, I don't even understand who I was or what
you
I was
because
doing.
You didn't even really talk about yourself, really, did you?
No,
early on,
it was fully, observational or.
And it was about the timing and
yeah.
So I think that
I'm still observational.
No, of course. But the cancer really broke open the personal point of view thing, talking about yourself.
Yeah, for sure. I still, I talk about, as I was saying, saying earlier in this conversation about how it's not like I am in remission now and then... I'm completely fine. It's been an ongoing situation.
Yeah.
And I talk about it, but what I'm focusing on is the awkward, uncomfortable experiences that happen.
Yeah.
And in the moment, people always ask, they're like, oh, when you're being wheeled out on a stretcher, you're thinking this is going to be a great story. Yeah. It's like, I've been through so much physical pain that if I'm being wheeled off somewhere, you better believe I can't handle it.
Yeah.
And so there's no part of me thinking, how am I going to structure this bit?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's got to beat itself out when you feel it.
Yeah.
This one, fortunately, in terms of discomfort or pain, it just seems that the physical therapy was the big, and that's much less... than cancer.
Yeah. The physical therapy. I mean, oh my God.
It's a funny image. You're a funny person.
Oh, you're silly.
How old are the kids?
They will be 8 in June. And they are, you know, like everyone, they're beautiful and hilarious and brilliant. And I think I have a comedian on my hands.
Really? One of them?
Yeah.
How do you know?
I mean, he's just so into words, and he's a little wordsmith, and he loves Bob Dylan. And
really?
I guess he probably could be, obviously, anybody can be anything.
Sure.
But he, you know, he writes, he journals, he draws cartoons, and he, when he listens to music, he wants to know, like, what does he mean by the mouth of a graveyard? You know what I mean? Like,
and, how do you answer that one?
Well, I don't. I'm just like, I don't know what he means. But, you know, Bob Dylan says don't analyze his lyrics.
Yeah,
So I told my son, don't think too much about it. But the perfect example of this is my son, Max. We were in Colorado when they were 6 last year.
Yeah.
Halloween time.
Yeah.
Driving down the road. Stephanie and I are, of course, in the front seat. Max and Finn are in the back. And while I was driving, I said, oh, my God, there's a pumpkin in the road. And Max, who is so bone dry, and people are like, wonder where he got that.
Yeah.
He is drier than I am. He's sitting in his little car seat in the back. And he says, you mean, oh, my gourd. And I look at Stennis, and I turn back and I said, what did you say? And he said, you mean, oh, my gourd. Pumpkins are gourds. I was like, I almost drove off the road. I was like, that is so funny. That's a good one.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Clever kid.
Yeah.
What's the other one up to?
Oh, my gosh. He's the kind of kid that could easily go on a talk show. We would never put him on one.
Right.
But he's, since he was 4, just like obsessed with, they're both very athletic.
Yeah.
But Finn knows stats. He knows history of sports.
Huh.
He can tell you the exact batting lineup. He can mimic each batter. He follows college, professional.
He's 8?
7.
Oh, my God.
He follows women's, men's, everything. And all around our kitchen, there's paper taped up with his handwritten, a little misspelled and, backward
right.
S's.
Sure.
All stats. He gets up at 5, looks at Stephanie's phone, gets stats, puts it on in the kitchen, on the walls. It's really something.
Where do you learn that?
Well, I mean, Stephanie, we're both athletic, but she is, you know, she's on a women's basketball league.
Oh, okay.
We take him to sporting events.
Oh, okay.
Her dad lives in town, and he's our, we call them the triplets. He's our child care.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's definitely
sports
influence, but look, I was raised in a house where everybody was watching games.
Yeah.
My brother played, I played. Man, he's just like...
It's so funny. So you got a poet and a sports guy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting.
And it makes sense. I mean, you can see both, right?
Absolutely.
From you guys.
And it might change.
Yeah.
Obviously. You know, I'm not a veterinarian or an architect like I hope to be. Or the Fifth Beatle. That was my biggest dream.
When you were a kid?
Yeah.
The Fifth Beatle?
And John Lennon had already been shot.
Oh.
And see. But when I listened to my albums, I was there.
Sure.
It didn't matter that it was the 80s.
Wow.
I was like, I'm going to be the Fifth Beatle. That was my dream.
Did you watch the doc?
I haven't.
That's crazy.
I want to, and I will, but...
Are you still like, do you still have Beatles in your heart?
Oh.
Yeah, of course, right?
So deeply.
I mean, you're going to watch that doc and just be like, what the fuck? like, they're just like it, because like two things happen. You're like, they're just people, but they're magic.
I know, but they're not.
they're not.
I just got back from New York 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And I can't help myself but go by the Dakota.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I always walk around Central Park. And as much as I loved every Beatle, I really did. Loved everyone so deeply, but I was more of a John.
Me too.
Oh my gosh.
But like, I interviewed Paul McCartney and, you know, in a live situation. And I really like, I had the opportunity. I'm going to interview Paul, but I'm really a John guy. Like, talking to Paul, I'm like, all right, Paul.
Yeah. I sat next to Paul at a vegetarian restaurant years ago. And then I was in line with Ringo Starr at Air One grocery store.
Down in Hollywood?
Yeah.
That one? Yeah.
Yeah. And so I've had two close brushes with Beatles. But I was so deeply John Lennon. Like, I felt his pain.
Yeah.
Oh, man, did I love him.
He's the best.
But yeah, I'm always drawn to the Dakota.
What do you feel when you go there?
What do I feel? I'm not quite sure. I think when I go and I look, in fact, I can show you, I took a picture of it again.
Yeah. Have you ever been inside?
No. Hmm. Maybe what it is it's that, that was obviously the last.
It
reminds me kind of when my mother died and I went home.
Yeah.
And I wrote about this in my book, but there was a vase with fresh flowers in the vase. And it feels like that I just missed you, you know, because when I came home from taking my mother off life support, I had gone from L.A., flown from L.A. to Houston. She and my stepfather were living in Houston at the time. And I went from the airport to the hospital, took her off life support, and then took a cab back to their house.
Yeah.
And when I went in, got home in the middle of the night, went into the kitchen, and I saw the vase with fresh flowers, and that I knew my mother put in that vase, and that felt like that I just missed you.
Yeah.
And that's maybe a similar thing.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Like it's there's something immediate about it.
Yeah, or most recent.
Yeah.
Before they were gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's also this thing like, you know, as I get older, like, you know, there are these things that you want to make sure you stay connected to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a way of doing it.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, standing out in front of the Dakota, like, you know, it still feels magic, right? And sad.
And sad. It's like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Where'd you shoot that special? At BAM? Is that what that was?
No. I just itched my head because you itched yours. Yeah. That's weird. I taped it at King's Theater.
It's beautiful.
It is so. Have you not been to King's
Theater? No, I thought it was the Brooklyn Opera House, and I had performed there. And if I didn't remember that it looked like that, I'd be like, what the fuck was I even doing?
Yeah.
But I'd never been there.
Yeah.
It's so stunning.
It's so beautiful.
It's in Brooklyn?
Mm-hmm.
I'd never even heard of it. Did they do plays? What do they do there?
I think they do everything. Huh. I directed four specials for HBO. Do you know that? Oh, what is the podcast? Two Dope Queens.
Yeah.
They did four specials there. And when I was working on that several years ago, I thought I had like one day come back and tape something here.
Yeah, it looks great.
Yeah.
And Stephanie directed it?
My wife directed it.
It's the first time she directed a special?
Yeah, the first time she had directed a special, we co-directed a feature with Dakota Johnson. That'll be coming out. I don't have an exact date, but it's coming out soon.
What's that about?
It's a later in life coming out story. Huh. Not like your grandma comes out type thing, but, you know, in your 30s where you're just like chugging along in life, but you got a secret and you're already.
And she's the lead?
Dakota.
Yeah.
And
I love her.
Yeah, she's wait till you see her in this. She is truly, she is so good.
Yeah.
It is such a stellar performance.
Okay.
And but I will say I'm very proud of what we did. I think we were one of the first, if not the first, productions back up and going in the pandemic. No vaccine, masks, we pulled this off. Yeah. It was really terrifying. And
no vaccines? No, I mean, what do you mean? Like
the vaccine had not.
Oh, it hadn't happened.
So
it's peak pandemic.
Yes. Yeah. We were out there in the early day. And I was truly like, what am I doing? Because I didn't know if I had heard from different people that I was potentially at higher risk because I had had cancer.
Oh,
and I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah. It's terrifying.
But we did it. And the film is called Am I OK? And it'll be announced soon when that's coming out. But it went to Sundance. It sold to HBO Max. And so
So it's coming out.
Yeah. It'll be out.
Did you manage to avoid COVID?
I got COVID one time.
Yeah, me too.
That I know of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was all right.
It pretty much leveled me.
I got very tired, but I didn't get totally sick.
Oh, I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. When I get something, I really go for it. I mean, it is, it's crazy.
But you look so fucking healthy.
I feel healthy, but I think I'm sensitive. I don't know what it is.
Oh,
but
so you've moved away from cursed to sensitive.
Yeah, I'm sensitive. Yeah. But it's like if a medication or a complication happens to
is available
1% of the population.
You're it.
I used to be like, oh, I'll be fine. But now when a doctor says there are some cases, I'm like, well, here we go. I have it for sure.
They should just change and put your name on the medication bottle. There are some problems that Tig has had with this. But she's one of three.
Mark, I'm telling you, it is across the board. It's ridiculous.
Well, it was good talking to you.
It was great talking to you.
So what do you eat for lunch now? What do you cook at home mostly? Chickpeas?
Oh, my God.
Why chickpeas?
Do you know what I am obsessed
what,
with?
What?
Look at you. What? Do you eat oatmeal?
Yeah.
Do you eat steel-cut oats?
Sure. It takes longer, but I'll eat them.
I mean, here's what you do. I do the whole batch for 5 days. I cook it all.
Oh, so you do the slow cook on the steel cut, and then you throw it in the fridge and throw it in the pot with a little non-dairy milk and revive it.
Okay, sure. Sometimes I eat it cold.
Oh, okay.
Or heat it up.
Sure.
But let me tell you, I make a massive batch of steel cut oats.
Yeah.
In that, I put bananas, wild frozen blueberries.
From Trader Joe's? Or one? Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Wild frozen blueberries.
Everything organic.
Yeah.
Raspberries.
Okay.
Banana, blueberry, raspberry, chia seeds, flax seeds, hemp seeds, cinnamon.
Do you cook it with the flax or put the flax after?
No, I cook the oats.
Because sometimes you cook with flax, it becomes gelatinous.
Yeah. No. Right. I put that in and then mix it all
in.
But also, I don't even cook it with any sort of milk substitute. I just make
water?
It with water.
Okay.
And actually the cinnamon, I don't put, and raisins,
okay,
gold,
raisin.
Yellow golden raisins.
Yeah.
Put those in there.
So you can just almost cut pieces out.
It is so good.
Yeah,
and
good.
It's not only a great and healthy breakfast.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk people saying like, do you get enough protein? This breakfast is so full of protein, your face will pop off.
Yeah.
And, it's such a great, healthy breakfast.
Yeah.
It is an incredible little snack during the day.
Yeah.
And dessert. But
nice.
I put the cinnamon on at the very end.
I like it. I do that. I cook brown rice for the week. But this seems like, because it almost feels like it's almost like one of those, almost becomes a casserole. Like you can cut pieces out, right?
It's a full-on casserole of oatmeal. And I'm very into bowls.
Yeah, me
I love
too.
Bowls.
I do bowls too.
Bowls, oatmeal.
Do you remember that restaurant in New York, Angelica Kitchen?
Mm-mm.
It was one of the early kind of high-end vegan places. It was a macro restaurant. So that's what I have in my head with a bowl. Like I have a grain, a bean, a protein, a pickled thing, and a sea vegetable if possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how I do it.
I love that stuff.
Yeah, me too.
And when people think that you're, that I'm wanting something.
Yeah.
No.
No, I love it.
God, I love
cooking it.
I love it.
I air fry tempeh all the fucking time.
We should have a cool cooking show.
Maybe. Yeah, a vegan. Do you ever follow vegan influencers? I follow them now.
Pretty much.
Fucking nuts.
That's what Stephanie makes fun of me. She's like, oh, she'll ask, oh, do you follow? And I always forget to follow people I know.
Right. I don't follow hardly anybody.
I will follow vegan. She'll be like, oh, right. You just follow heads of lettuces.
Yeah.
But that's basically what I'm interested in.
I don't like to follow. Like, I have a few people I followed for years that were part of a larger group of people. Mm-hmm. But mostly they're not comics.
Yeah.
Like, they're just random people.
Did I tell you during the pandemic I got a plant-based nutrition certification?
Well, I think so. I think that was part of the oil discussion.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, sorry. We won't get back into that.
So what does that enable you to do?
Well, I'm not like trying to do anything with it necessarily, but I wanted it for my own information because I find nutrition so interesting.
Yeah.
And how putting the wrong stuff in your body will break you down and putting the right stuff in will keep you going. But I did, when I was working with Reese Witherspoon, I said to her, I was like, yeah, during the pandemic, I got this certification and I've been helping my neighbor and other comedians and family members that need any sort of guidance.
Yeah.
And I said, I've been thinking about maybe consulting. And she said, oh, yeah, because that'll make you hundreds of dollars. She's like, that's a great idea. And in that moment, I was like, I guess that is. Because I'm probably not going to start consulting.
She's something.
Have you interviewed her?
No, but I've met her like once, you know.
She's a little pistol.
Yeah, really. She's great.
Yeah. Oh, she's awesome. Yeah.
All right. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you.
There you go. Now you know. And that was deep stuff. I didn't know where we were going to go. But again, you can watch her new special, Tig Notaro, Hello Again, Prime Video starting March 26th. Hang out for a minute, people.
Hi, this is Sherelle Dorsey from TED Tech, and this episode is brought to you by Solidigm. The world runs on data, and data relies on storage. But most businesses rarely think about how crucial that storage really is. The truth is, it's no longer just a commodity. With new demands and constraints, especially from AI, the old ways of managing data are holding innovation back. Solid-state storage from Solidigm is changing that. It helps reduce energy use, shrink physical footprints, and accelerate data at the edge, unlocking more from your AI infrastructure. Learn more at whatsthestateofyourstorage.com.
Hey, you never know what wonders await you in the WTF archives. 6 years ago this week, we had our 900th episode, and I commemorated it by saying goodbye to my old garage. Oh, wow. So this is what the plan is. I'm gonna take down stuff here in the garage, moving towards the selling of the house. So I've set up a few boxes here. I've got a box for documents, and I've got a box for stuff I'm gonna keep, and I've got a box for stuff that I'm probably not gonna keep, nothing personal. And the first thing I'm looking at over here is these are the notes for the Obama interview, and I saved this thing from the Secret Service. Telephone trap sheet. Please fill out the blank spaces with as much information as possible. Special agents may sign as a witness. And then bomb threat sheet. I don't know what all that meant, but it, as a page, it looks pretty good. Oh, I see. You had a checklist. I guess I checked this stuff. It didn't fill out here. And then there's just the notes from Brendan that we put together to talk to Obama about. And then there's my notes and some more notes. So I should keep this. It was a fairly complicated day. So that goes in the document box. Oh, it's already happening. Oh, my God. This weird thing is a strange man made out of pipe cleaners straddling a rat, a plastic or rubber rat. I've had this since college. I remember making it when I was high. The pipe cleaner guy has a very defined cock and balls for some reason, and he's riding a rat. It seems like a rare piece of ephemera. I will keep that. This is the first iPod. That seems like I should keep that. Oh, this is some notes. Who is this? Father, politics, why? Enlisted in Navy, political help his father. Oh, Al Gore. Al Gore notes. I'll keep those. This is a Spider-Man comic with the not ready for primetime players. And I think it's close to the original cast of SNL. Yeah, minus Chevy and Spider-Man. I don't know where I got this, but I'll keep that. Oh, here's my high school diploma. I did it. I did it. Mark David Maron satisfactorily completed the course of study prescribed for graduation from Highland High School. Look at that. Look at that. I did it, folks. I should keep that. You can listen to episode 900 for free in all podcast apps or subscribe to WTF Plus to get every episode of WTF ad-free with the option to get bonus episodes twice a week. Just go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. Okay, Tom Petty. Monkey, LaFonda, cat angels everywhere.